Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, they call me Pook. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up and be a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
Welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Grateful that you have joined us either via the podcast platform on Blog Talk Radio or via live stream here on Facebook. Grateful that you can take the time to be with us. And I hope that you join the conversation tonight. You can do so by either sharing your question or comments via the Facebook app here, or we would certainly encourage you to give us a call here live in studio. When you do so, we can talk and have a conversation. 657-383-0944. Again, that's 657-383-0944. We hope to have Pastor Ricky Waller coming on. In the event that you are just joining us for the first time, you should know that this podcast is a national dialogue, Building Families and Communities Institute. You've heard in the advertisement or the commercial that we are focusing our attention on at-risk males across urban America. And I believe strongly that when we do so, we will address the needs of females as well. But our primary focus is the family. All right? Yours truly is the researcher and the host and producer for this podcast. We strive to provide factual information. In fact, as I will tonight, we generally offer a monologue to give us some context or background for our discussion. I don't profess to have all the answers, but I have taken time to give you as much any facts as we can. And I don't expect everyone to agree with what I say, nor what the callers to agree with one another all the time. It's great if we do, but we do expect that we show respect and courtesy to one another as we all. Again, that number 657-383-0944 to call and join us in this conversation. We will endeavor to hold another episode of Talking Straight, okay, and so what we'll do now is we'll get to our monologue, and after our monologue, we'll open up our phone line. I have, posthumously, Dr. Martin Luther King, who's going to sit in with me. I could not do this monologue without his help. I hope you are paying attention, because Dr. King is going to help us intimate concept for tonight. far too many people living in urban American communities feel as though justice is not equitable, for them at least anyway. Larger issue, though, is the presence of socioeconomic factors that preempt illegal and or antisocial behaviors, resulting in the threat to their justice and justice for everyone else around them. So tonight, what we're going to strive to do, and with the help of Pastor Waller when he comes on, and you, our listening audience, is we're going to strive to explain and talk about restorative justice in the context of how it is we can resolve this confusion or this issue, this feeling, this notion that there are two types of justice systems in America. We had it said the other night on air, one of our callers expressed the opinion that there's a justice for black people, African Americans, there's a justice for the other people. Well, and as I shared then, I take issue with that. What's on paper is that there's only one justice system, only one constitution, and we strive to explain how that operates from the United Nations Charter to the U.S. Constitution to your individual state, wherever you are across in the United States of America, your codes annotated, and then even your city charter. All right? Nonetheless, that's what we're going to strive to do, is to give some context and background. Having said that, let's get right to it. All right. The topic is how to bring restorative justice to urban American communities. How you doing, Ms. Georgia? That's what we're talking about tonight. How to bring restorative justice to urban American communities. Let me share this biblical text with you. It says simply, that ye may be the children of your Father, which is in heaven. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and the unjust. Now, I don't know of a better, more fair, or equitable justice than that. In other words, I can be a low-down, dirty, junkyard dog, and the same judgment will come my way as someone who is humble, honorable, and productive. Justice is real, all right? Let's define, just right quickly, restorative and justice, and then let's try to do a composite meaning of restorative justice from that standpoint. Just as a generic definition, restorative, to be restorative, is a process of bringing back to a former position or a condition, okay? It involves the restoring of an unimpaired or improved condition. So things are not going to be the way they used to be, all right? There is an inference there that we have a linear scope or of time where we started at one point and we're at another point, and perhaps there's a need to regress and go back and bring it back. Perhaps I should say circular point of view, bring things back to where they once were. All right? That's what we're talking about when we're talking about restorative. Now, let's talk about justice. Justice. You know that the justice system in America is based on our United States Constitution. And accordingly, as we intimated the other night, each state, the 10th Amendment provides for each state, in Article 4 of the Constitution, for each state to represent the interests of their individual citizens, right, and to develop their own laws there, so long as that they don't supersede the powers of the United States Constitution, right? So justice, the quality of being just, righteousness, equitableness, moral rightness, full or lawful, you know, justice around a reason, right? Conformity to the latter principle as manifested by one's conduct, their dealing, and their treatment with and toward others. So when we talk about justice, it's really the individual. That's similar to our topic the other night in terms of certain things being an individual responsibility. Okay? Now, restorative justice, accordingly, I think we can conclude tonight, is the process of bringing back fairness in the justice system as related to what was once present, and now there is a presence of unevenness in the circumstance or condition. So restorative justice focuses itself on bringing back a place of time. When we talk about urban American communities, we have to ask the question, though, at what point did American justice not apply to urban American communities? Now, let's not be naive. We know that things like black codes and slavery and the ending of slavery and black codes and Jim Crow and things of that nature, we realize they exist. And there was a time and a period. There's an argument to be made, however, that restorative justice began when those things ended, such that even people of African or Afro-American Negro descent in America had the same opportunities and access to the justice system as anyone else. What we hope to clear tonight is how is it that we take full advantage of that or that works for us. How you doing, Ramadi? All right. Now, this is the point that I bring Dr. Martin Luther King in, because I think he can do a little bit better job than I can intimating this concept of injustice and racism as it relates to our topic tonight. Why don't you hear ye hear him just for a few minutes?
This is a protest and a struggle against racism and injustice, and this is what we are working to eliminate in our organization and in our total struggle. I would also like to commend the outstanding athletes who have the courage and the kind of determination to make it clear that they will not participate in the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City unless something is done about these terrible problems, these terrible evils and injustices. Freedom always demands sacrifice.
All the civil rights leaders, for various reasons, refuse, can't take a stand, or have to go along with the administration. That's their business. I'm afraid that I know that justice is indivisible. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We will be able to emerge from the bleak and desolate midnight of man's inhumanity to man to the bright and glittering daybreak of freedom and justice. They go talking about these little levels of progress that we see here and there, and they say, you know, you've made great progress. Aren't you satisfied? No, we are not satisfied. We will not be satisfied as long as Negro boys and Negro girls are forced to live life without dignity and without respect. We will not be satisfied. I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. So I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian emancipation proclamation can do this for us. No Tennesseanian or Johnsonian civil rights bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own emancipation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure. Well, I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and Jewish.
You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We're talking from the topic tonight, how to bring restorative justice to urban American communities. And I got my good friends on. Pastor Ricky Wallace here with me. He's in the house. I got Outcast, and I got that pretty lady out of Florida again, 3072. Guys, I'm going to take an oppositional position with all due respect to Dr. King. Do you all think y'all can defend his position?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Outcast?
We'll see.
Okay. Pastor Wallace, don't get quiet on me, man. You think you'll defend Dr. King? You there, Pastor Wallace?
I am. I'm here.
Okay. All right.
I couldn't hear it very well.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Were y'all
able to hear it okay?
Were y'all able to hear Outkast and 3072?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, what Dr. King was saying is that black boys and girls are faced with a certain challenge. Now, keep in mind, he spoke this as he was pushing and fighting to end segregation, right? My question is, does that apply today in 2018? Is there still injustice? Is there still a need to restore justice for Negro, black, and colored folks? That's my question.
In a sense, I would say yes.
Mm.
And I would say yes around the board, you know, because like you got justice and injustice, you got just laws and you have unjust laws, and the unjust laws have always seemed to have been targeted to minorities in a sense. So that's how I would answer that. The unjust laws.
Right. Okay. I'm going to ask you a question behind that, but I'm going to see if Pastor Waller or 3072 have a response to that.
I would say
either one of you guys.
Man. Go ahead, 3072.
Go ahead, Pastor.
You can step on in there. Okay.
Sometime today, guys.
Yeah. So what I gather out of it, the question is, you know, is there any room, basically, for straightening out things that is improper? In other words, if a person is doing something wrong, Mm-hmm. And the law was given, but never obeyed. That's one thing. But if
okay.
you're doing things with the intent to cause a person to stumble, that's another.
Okay.
So
okay.
that's where the game come in at, because there is a game that's been played. It was played back then, and I don't know because of not being in there, but on up until right now is basically what you're saying. Are the games still rolling on? That would be the question that I would ask myself. And I would say yes. There is an intent to cause a person to, because why would you build a place to incarcerate people if you're just going to have it there just to be there? So you have to do things that's going to cause people to attempt to do things. Now, whether they do it or not, that's by choice. And if you're ignorant, as I said, as I have been in my life, and you're nowhere around, and you put something out there before me, that if I just tried it one time and like it, whether it's getting money, whether it's gambling, whether it's smoking, whatever it is,
okay.
that could cause a person to be incarcerated. You understand? And one may say, well, is it my fault or is it the person's fault who put it there? If you've done that with the intent to cause me to fall and hurt myself, I think that's a wrongdoing.
Okay.
You see? So it all boils down to choices, and we do have choices today. To choose whether I was going to go over there and smoke that marijuana or do that drug
right.
or sell that drug or rob, steal, I mean, all the other things that comes with it. If
yes,
you
sir.
Know better, you would do better, you would think. But a lot of people don't know no better until they find out later, you know, that, man, they'll lock you up for this.
Mm.
They'll do this and the other. So
okay.
is it intentional?
So now,
that would be my question.
Well, so here's the thing now, Pastor. It sounds like the undertone of your position is that these things are geared toward certain people, and let's be specific, African-American people, minority. Is that correct? Am I hearing you correct, or am I making
that's,
a
that's,
getting
that's always been my concern.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
all
always
right.
been
all
my
right.
concern. And that's right. my only concern, all really.
All right. All right,
yeah.
hold on one second.
I'm just being
second.
Honest.
So,
yeah.
so in light of the fact that prior to 1865, Negroes in America, most of them were slaves, and there was a penal institution in America before they were even free, so it didn't apply to them. This was for white folk or Europeans
right.
or other people that came and broke American laws. So the jail system or the prison system existed before black people were even free to do their own thing. You're right. Somehow, after they became free, they seem to have a misrepresentation or overrepresentation in comparison to the rest of society. We've always only been a small portion of American society. But something about our behaviors, guys, that seems, not everybody, let me be very clear, not everybody, but something about those African-Americans who wind up in the criminal justice system's behavior that seems to bring them close to or place them in peril of the justice system. Now, with that in mind, Pastor, do you think it's just that somebody was setting them up, or is it something about our socialization that sets us up? Pastor Wallow or anybody?
Yeah, I mean,
I would say, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. If I didn't see it in the Word of God, I wouldn't even tamper with it because I would have an opinion about that. But when I seen something in the Word of God where it states very clear, it said that they would set a net, a snare, a trap.
Okay.
You know, that means they're doing it intentional, you know, to
okay,
cause a person,
that.
You know, and that's the only reason why I say that. You know, I was ignorant and didn't know any better. I didn't see nothing about no Word of God because I didn't know it. But now the question still remains.
Okay.
Why is these things happening in the community in which I dwell on the north, south, east, and the west side?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's an intentional thing. And so that's my concern. I have a concern about that. I'm really actually concerned about it to a level, you know, to
okay.
where how do you stop? How do you stop it? You get to the core of it. You know, and if we learn how to choose, we don't know how to choose, but if we learn how to choose, then we don't have to do the drugs or whatever else we're putting in our community to help us self-destruct.
Okay.
You see?
Okay.
So, you know,
okay.
we got the hand. They're helping
all
us right. self-destruct.
All right. Outcast, what were you going to say?
What it all deals with antisocial behavior. I like the way you went back concerning slavery and the prison system. You know, it was just basically built for the Europeans. But after the Civil War, whatever, you know, coming up into the early 1900s and probably the latter part, the later part of the 1800s, they started using their slave labor in prison.
That's
you
right.
Know,
that's right.
This is something what caused the white flight up north and things, and that's what Negroes started moving. They were just snatching them off the street, giving them bogus charges. And had them working here in the state of Tennessee. I think it was back in 1976 or 1977. you had a governor, you had an individual that was running
okay.
for governor. And he
wow.
ran on the platform of keep criminals in their place. And this is
yes,
when
sir.
Your prison institutions, especially here in Tennessee, started getting overcrowded. And that that so-called person that was running, well, he's not a so-called person. He's still in Congress now. There was Lamar Alexander. He did. He helped create that.
Oh,
he already had a plan
for that. I knew you
that.
Were going there.
Then, and, well, I mean, I'm telling the truth, you know. And then all
oh,
of a sudden,
you're talking straight. You're talking
they started
straight.
Privatizing.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, they started privatizing your prisons and things of that nature. Prisons in Tennessee used to be sufficient. What I mean by that is that they, a lot of the produce they grew it. They had the cows and the hogs and the chickens. You know, they still got some of the I don't know where the chicken house is now. Last I heard, it was in Turner Center. But now all of that when Ned MacRuther came in, he brought in the quick chill and all that disappeared. You know, because it's all about money now, warehousing. You know, but
okay.
a lot of it, I'm a hoe. I hope.
Well, now,
yes,
now I'm still taking an opposition. I'm playing the devil's advocate tonight, and I hear Dr. King, and I hear you all. But now there's something else that I think we're overlooking, friends, and that is the personal responsibility that me, you, and everybody else have to meet the expectations of the law. And therefore, you stay out of the clutches of the criminal justice system. No?
Well, 100%. There's no argument.
Okay.
I think
go
that.
Go ahead, 37. What are you going to say?
I think that maybe you missed the part where Dr. King spoke about reaching down inside and turning that key to free yourself. I mean, so
okay,
exactly.
Okay.
It right, because I mean, and I feel like I'm in that state. Honestly, I walk, I talk, and I live that every day. I don't care what somebody else's opinion is about me. You call me a nigger or any. That's not who I am. So clearly, whatever you're thinking or saying, that's on the negative tip. That's
right.
That's fine, but it doesn't affect me.
Right.
And because I walk in that shadow, then I am able to be conscious of the law, to be good to people, to be honest, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's about a self-choice, I think. I mean.
So even if, so is the trap that Pastor Wallace was making reference to, and I will give you a chance to respond, Pastor, since I'm making reference to your statement, the trap that Pastor Wallace was talking about, even if there's a trap that's out there, does that mean you have to make yourself available to the trappers or the trap itself? Go
no.
ahead. Hear me back, Pastor. Knock me out, Pastor. Knock me out.
Yeah, if you don't see it, if somebody done it and made sure that you don't see it. So when you run into it, it can go forward. It was intentional.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
See, that's one thing.
Okay.
You know, it's just
how can
watch
we
one.
Yes, sir. Yes. Well, now, Pastor, if I'm wrong now, if I'm dead wrong and I'm illegal, should I get a pass from the law?
No, I don't think you should get a pass because that's not where it is. The law was given but never obeyed, so that it's not designed to give you a pass unless they had to. That's not what you're doing. So if you think you're any kind of pass, you know, that comes in, then there's no need to have a system that incarcerate a person. So what they have to do, they have to lock you up before you get there.
Okay. That's interesting.
I like that one.
Come on,
Outcast.
You're trying to say something. I hear you.
Oh, yes, I am trying to say something. You know, illegal. Tell you what. Go sneak across that border over there in Mexico and see what they're going to do to you. They're not going to slap you on your hand. They're going to give you prison time. You know, sneak into China. Sneak over there in Russia and see what they're going to do to you.
Right.
You know, now, America is a lax when it comes to a whole lot of stuff. You know, I mean, still, at the end of the day, I think those illegals would rather get locked up here in the United States, get detained in the United States than Russia, China, or someplace like that, because they're not going to stop this, kick their heels and be out in a month or two or 3 months and then go on walk free, and then they give them some amnesty or freedom or whatever, you know what I mean? Let me shut up.
Well, and you're going right where I wanted to be, Outcast.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'll come back after you 37-2. But you go
I want you to lose that thought. I want you to lose that thought. You go on brain.
Okay, so watch this. One of the reasons it's so easy for foreigners, black people, white people, and anybody that get caught up to come here and have so much grace and have so many appeals is because of due process. That's part of the democratic process, right? Now, many people are exploiting that. And some of them are dead wrong, but because they were able to get off with the fancy lawyer and tricks and what have you, guess what?
Yeah.
They never face justice.
That's right.
I'm not just talking about black people, I'm talking about white folk too. You understand what I'm saying? So the problem is, sometimes I wonder if people have just, let me make sure I say this right, Outcast. I'm trying to talk straight too, see. I think it's enough rope to hang yourself with all these freedoms and what have you, and you get away, it looks like you get away with murder. Some people literally do.
Yeah.
You know, let's use Orenthal Simpson, Orenthal James Simpson, or O.J. Simpson. Now, he got off. He got off, why? Because he had enough money to hire a dream team of lawyers to play games and trick the Constitution and the court system.
And then he got off and got caught again.
Let me finish this thought. But what the dream team could not do for him is keep him from being stupid enough to go back out there after getting off. And staying out of trouble.
That's right.
That's what the dream team could not do for him.
That's right.
And that brings me back to personal responsibility for our actions as regard in regards to obedience to the law.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but now I hear what Pastor Waller was saying too about, you know, people that are, and I do believe that there are some people that's out there that is dead wrong than two left shoes, and they just don't know any better. You know,
what?
So that's like a
they don't know no better. They don't know no better. Hey, Pastor.
Yeah, I'm needing.
Wait, Pastor, you and your girl. Wait a minute. Look, Pastor. If they put that heat on, they put that heat behind you, you'll take off and run, won't you? You know better.
Hey, man.
Well,
listen, when you,
no,
go ahead,
right,
Pastor.
And they,
hold
they're
on, let Pastor go. Go ahead, Pastor.
Mm-hmm. Let 37-2 come in because I got to be able to coincide with what you're saying. Because when you don't know the truth, it will not make you free. When you don't know the truth, but when you know the truth, that's different. Big difference.
And it's all just a matter of time before the universe, karmatic cycles, and God catch up with you. You're not free. You're not. That's the problem.
Wow.
That's the problem.
So,
You gonna wish you was locked up when all the stuff kept up with you.
Be careful, guys, because you're making the case for controlling people that are of a chronologically grown age who don't know no better and are just like babies out there in the street.
And guess what? I am all for that. I am all for it. Some of them need to be controlled. Yeah.
Well, y'all, I'm not going to disagree with all that. I agree with them.
Because how fair and how just and how right is that? You got somebody who is trying to abide and live by the law and do all that they can, and then you got these other people, ignorant or not, that's hurting them. That's like a robbery or stealing of their life, and they've done nothing to deserve that. Somebody should protect them. Somebody should.
Interesting.
Now, can I say something about what you just said?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, and I stay with, you know why I stay with the word. I was so tired of being wrong, and for the many years that I was, like, captured, you know, so I stopped trusting me. So anyway, I found out what to trust in that. So the word of God says that the watchman now, who sees the sword coming and blow not the trumpet. And if anybody is captured into it, he said that the blood is going to be on the watchman's hand.
Yeah.
He's going to warn them, and then they get caught up in it. Then it's not on my hand because I put out a warning, blew the trumpet.
Now,
that's what the Word of God says. So there are people that are supposed to be the watchmen over the community. And they see the sword coming.
Right.
I got all this information, and I'm withholding it from them, and I'm not going to let them know. I'm not going to just sound the alarm so they can get captured. Then that's going to be on me. You know, they're not going to charge them. He's going to charge me for that. He said, okay, you knew that this was going to happen to them, and you didn't warn them. But if I warned them and it happened, just like these two guys that I went to the funeral, they OD'd off the heroin. But did it bother me? Yes, it bothered me. But not to the point where I'm being charged with it, because I did sound the alarm. But the power of the enemy is so strong, it's hard to break them bad habits like them guys have, you know? And three or four days apart, one OD on this day, and three or four days later, another one OD.
So, you know, it's not
nothing to play with out there, man. This is tough. These guys are captured, trapped, and it's hard to break free even when someone is reaching out. But at least that was a warning.
Yeah.
Right. So, Pastor, come on now. Come on, get with me now. Come on. I empathize with you, right? And I know we got a problem. I know we got a problem. But how do you get, you come in the world and you get to be 18 or older and you don't have a clue about what's going on?
Nobody tells you.
What?
I was 34, Pastor, before I came to myself. I was 34.
Wow.
I thought I was grown at 18. I was still acting like a child at 18. I wasn't grown.
My God.
You see?
So what you're telling me is, you're telling me it's some chronologically grown people out there that are really just like little babies that we need to bring right back at the house. Maybe whip their tails and put some discipline. That's what I'm hearing now.
Right today. Right today, brother.
Wow.
Right today. It will be nice, man.
And back to what the pastor was saying, so you got people checking into the hospital with really severe diseases like syphilis, hepatitis C, and they come in because of close to overdose. All they're thinking about, hey, it's the first. The doctor's not going to release me. I'm just going to walk out of here. I'm going AMA. Ooh, if you walk out of here and go AMA, you may not get high because you may die before you get to the man to buy the stuff from. They don't know. They're ignorant to rationale, reasoning even.
Wait a minute now. But what if I'm not on drugs? Because we have two young men that are in Metro Jail right now, and there are three lives that are lost senselessly. Senselessly.
Yeah.
I don't care what excuse you make about what you've been through life, that does not justify you destroying senselessly three human lives. And they weren't all just,
it don't.
They weren't all white. It was a black brother, young brother, 31
yeah.
years old, going to work, trying to live his life. You understand what
yeah.
I'm saying? Now, how do
yeah.
you, so are we talking about restorative justice? And this is this is Talk Straight. We're talking how to bring restorative justice to urban American communities. The truth of the matter is, sometimes these folk that are saying, Pastor, that they don't get justice, the problem is not that everybody else is out of order, but you out of order.
Yeah,
and whatever. But and the other problem is you so grown that you think can't nobody tell you nothing to stop you. So the only people that can do that thing, which is the police, that's what they're out there for.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, they call them. That's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to come and respond, you know, to the call. That's what they do.
So I won't have to put my hands on it.
I think that's
yeah.
another, you bringing up a whole nother sensitive issue too with that, because there's injustice in them just coming to, you know, try to make peace. Some of them ain't out there trying to make peace. Some of them are out there stuck. They're stuck on the fact the police, the popos, the P,
oh, yeah.
the 5-0. Oh, yeah. They're stuck
okay.
on, they're stuck on the fact that, you know, Chicago is bad and crime is running rampant and all that. So, yeah that
well,
doesn't
true.
Mean you just take matters into personal, your own personal
right.
hands. You
okay,
go
yeah.
ahead.
That's true.
That's
true.
Yeah.
You're right about that, that you don't. Now, but let's understand, we talked about this a couple of shows before, the concept
yeah.
of proactive policing. Proactive
yeah.
policing. Proactive policing
mm-hmm.
comes in when you have to try to get to the bottom of an issue or resolve a case, right? And
okay.
and when
yeah.
you have the when you have the no snitch rule where people are not working with the police. See
right.
what I mean? So they have
yeah.
to use everything that they can to proactively resolve a homicide. Now the truth of the matter is, let's
well,
put the
they're not.
Oh, hold on,
okay,
hold on one second.
Ahead.
Hold on one second. Let's put all West Week is now. The FBI report consistently shows that 50% of all of American homicides involve African Americans. And in
mm-hmm.
over 93% of those cases, it's black on black crime. Let's
mm-hmm.
we're talking about restorative justice, right?
Yeah.
yeah.
Let's put all West Week is. Go ahead. I'm sorry. 37.
Okay.
Go ahead.
37. So I mean, and I wasn't in disagreement with that, but you were talking about the police and restoring justices again, and
right.
I think it's the whole world is just getting sick as a whole. So you got people not out there focusing on, and I'm talking about the police now, and that's not all
okay.
of them, but there's a vast majority that's not focusing on restoring justice.
Oh.
Is some personal vendetta mess.
You said there
you
are
know.
The vast majority that are, have a personal vendetta? Did I hear you correctly?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
there's
right.
there's a huge, a large amount. I'm sorry. Yes. And the vendetta,
wow.
I see it every day. The vendetta is not, you know, to follow, if we're hiring you to abide by the law and help other people to do that, then you need to follow the law to the letter, to
yes.
the letter, meaning
okay.
you don't shoot people in the back of the head because they're running. You don't – do you get what I'm saying? You got all this – you don't just beat somebody senseless because, you know, that's a part of the job.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. They doing too much.
I want you to tell
yeah.
me, what do you base your assertion that there's a certain number of law enforcement
on
you know,
the news reports that I'm talking
okay.
now. So I'm talking about the news reports that I see. I'm talking about personal experience, the people that I know, and I'm talking about other people that witness things every day. Some of the things
okay.
I witness personally.
Okay.
They're
yeah.
giving authority. They're giving authority in a lot of cases. And again, I'm not saying all, but in a lot
yeah.
of cases, the wrong people are given authority because they, for one, they don't know how to think rationally. And two, they stuck on
yeah.
themselves and not the law. If somebody runs and they get away, okay, they get away this time. That, you know, I don't know. It's just everything is going sick.
I take your point. I take your point, 3072. That's why you going to say something in reference to that?
Yeah, I am. And the reason why I put emphasis on this is because one is too many. One act of nonsense like that is for the police officers to know the training that they've had.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They don't need to know. They be trained. They know what they're doing. You understand? But we want to believe that. So we don't have no moment of saying, well, they didn't know no better. No, they knew better. You see what I'm saying? Once they done that, they knew better. So, and that's not just to shoot people down. Even when they stop people sometimes, for those who do that, one is too many. If you're going to do this on purpose because you don't have anything else to do, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Then you're not giving them protection.
Yeah.
You're meddling.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, and that's the system. The system is made up. You've got to get out there and arrest somebody. And if you don't, then try. You know what I mean?
Let me say this.
So if it calls, if it means stopping somebody, even if they're not doing anything, just to see if you can get an arrest.
Yes.
Come over the hood, and I got a call just the other day. I'm going to right and turn it over to you. Just yesterday, around the 6:30 or 7 o'clock hour, I got a call. I was across town going to the body shop, the car, to check on the car, and a guy called me from out West Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And the man said, the police been having this man in the car for X amount of hours or so like this, and it was kind of like, man, why are they doing him like this? So they called me, wanted me to come and check and see what was going on with the situation. Why would they call me? Again, I humbly say, as a watchman out there in that community, man, apparently this stuff is going on so rapidly that they made a call to me. I wasn't really around just to see if I would come and see what on and why they're doing this man like this. I don't know why they stopped him, but I'm just using that for example. This is how tough it is out there, man. To get a phone call like that and knowing that it must be, they feel like they're missing and whatever was going on, finally, after about 5 minutes of being on the phone with me, because I started my car, getting ready to come on out there, and he said that, well, they're getting ready to take him out the back seat now, and whatever they've done after that, I mean, I don't know if they get him stopped. I don't know what happened, but I'm just using that for an example. It's not easy to be out there and being stopped, you know, for whatever the reason was. I don't know. Maybe he wasn't doing anything the way them people would. When they called me, why would they call me? If the man was doing something, then I'm sure they're not going to just call me. But they called me, apparently, the police might have stopped him just on GP. I don't know, man.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
Let me say this. The police are charged to represent, serve, and protect any one of them, as with any public office. The 1965 Civil Rights Act, the color of law clause, makes it illegal for them to abuse the authority. Okay? So let's establish that. Hold on one second. Just listen to me for a second. So let's establish that. Okay? That's illegal. And anyone found doing it should be held to account. Even if they are wearing a badge, they should be decommissioned and so forth and so on. All right, now, the truth of the matter is, beloved, that when individuals have these interactions with law enforcement officials, it's not generally in their homes. It's on the street in some public venue. The question is, what is precipitating that? Do they not know how their behavior is bringing attention to them from law enforcement? Now, Pastor Wall, let's use your scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't there, and I'm not sure what happened before you got there or the people that called you. I'm not sure if they gave you the full scope of what happened. I don't know. But what I do know is if the police stopped me today and they held me in a car for 10 hours or 12 hours, it's not going to do any good to fight them.
Yeah, no.
You understand what I'm saying?
And that's the thing I like. What you said is not going to do any good to fight them, but you can get their attention. You see what I'm saying?
You can
get their attention. You know, when you got somebody that's concerned, And you got a law-abiding citizen that's standing by that's just that concerned to make a call like that. And I'm using that for an example to know that I would come out there and knowing to be concerned about the situation, not to say stop doing this, stop doing that, but just being concerned like they know that I am about the community out there.
Sure.
I understood why they called, and the people that called me wasn't somebody that was just was going to mislead me. You see what I'm saying? They wasn't going to do that.
It was
a legitimate call. And so I started my car up as if I'm going to go out there to see it. But, man, it must be really something that's irritating to them for them to call me like that. And but let me use my example as well. Okay, I was stopped. They held me for much longer than I would like to have been held after stopping me for just crossing the line. I mean, if you're going to give me a ticket or whatever you're going to do, I had to wait for them to call the dogs and everything else. It went from crossing the line to calling for the dogs to search my car. And things like that. That was misuse of authority. But they didn't know I was a minister, and I did not tell them that I was a minister. You see?
Yeah.
And I just wanted to see how far they were going to go. I gave them my driving license, went through the process, and before I knew it, I had to sit there, and they had to call for the dogs. I'm on 40s in Charlotte. They had to call for the dogs out there on a Bell Road, and I had to wait an hour and a half for the dogs to come and do all this.
Wow.
See, that was not... What, Pastor, hold on one second, Pastor. You said they call the dogs. Now, you know typically why they call canine, right?
I know they was wrong for even stopping not to mention the call the dogs.
I'm not suggesting that you were wrong. I'm asking you, do you know why they use canine in the traffic?
Yeah, I know. No, it wasn't. I knew why they called the canine is because, number one, they knew that stopping me wasn't right. They knew stopping me wasn't legit, the one who stopped me. I'm not blaming the canine, the guy that brought the canine over here. I'm talking about the one that stopped me. He knew that he was wrong. See, he knew he was wrong before he stopped me. You see,
I understand.
That's the thing that I'm saying. When you're misusing your authority,
Did you know this officer?
No, I didn't know him. I seen him from the start before he even came behind me. He was sitting right there on the lot. I seen him before he took off. And so you can't just assume that a person is doing something, you understand what I'm saying, and saying, okay,
I guess
I'm going to stop you. You don't make no difference what you're like it or not. I'm going to kill you. I'm stopping you. And so this is what happened, man. And so I've had that example used on me, so I can only imagine.
And
they found
and
out
so,
I was a late on. But man, that
Reverend
that was
Docker, you may want to say, well, the police have the right to pull somebody over if they suspect or suspicious. Again, back to common sense. Them granting you authority to use better judgment than just the public. So you cannot just look at somebody and say, oh, he wearing some Jordans. He must be got a kilo of dope in his car. Or this white man that just killed five people is in a nice suit and tie, and we're not going to stop him, and you know, because he looks like a law-abiding. What looks like what? You cannot go by that. Just personal. That's not right. Okay.
All right. You're right about that. 3072. However, I wonder if you're considering the fact that police officers are trained and they get some of the same training that federal officers get with the Federal Bureau of Investigation. They're trained to analyze situations and to investigate based on probable calls. I cannot speak specifically about any condition. Here's what I do know, though. When you see certain things taking place, they're generally, and let's use, for instance, the canine dog. Canines are a valuable part of policing because they help to sniff out illegal weapons and explosives as well as drugs.
And they're very smart.
Hold on, Pastor. I'm not suggesting, that you were guilty of having any drugs. I'm simply saying why they are part of the police, policing.
And I think, I think what the pastor.
Let me finish my 37. Let me finish my thought, then come back at me. I know you're gonna get me, but let me finish my thought so you can understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, the average citizen is not aware or familiar with proactive policing measures. So it looks like it's unnecessary, and it seems like they're just picking on somebody.
Okay.
What you should do is to reserve judgment, though, in suggesting that they're only doing that because they don't like you because you're black. That's the thing I'm saying. All right, go ahead. You were going to say something, then Santa Wallace was going to.
No.
Go ahead, Thursday.
Okay. So, no, back to what you just said about not assuming they're only doing that because I'm black. That's not even the first thing that comes to my mind because I'm black. The first thing that comes to my mind is they only doing this because they need to try to get something to take back to the police station. Or they just sick in the freaking head.
Imagine.
You don't like how I talk to you. You don't like, ma'am, your tone of voice. How do you know what my natural tone of voice is? How do you know that? Can you just do whatever you're going to do? And no, they get off on this ego power trip. I'm supposed to look down when you talk to me. I can't look you in the face like you that's some crap. These people out here with these badges.
Who said that?
I'm sorry. Huh?
Who said you can't look at me? You see it
every day. I had an officer yelling and screaming at me one time on Bryan Parkway because I asked him why he pulled me over. Because I asked him that.
I see.
And he asked me, why am I speeding on his road, on his, your road, what?
Okay. All right. I got you.
So they come off. Yes, with these direct complexes, and they want to be intimidating. They want to be disrespectful in some way, and they want to feel good by making you feel less or afraid.
Yes.
That's not why we elect, or that's not why they're put in office or in service.
True.
That should not be your first intent to bring fear. It's to restore order and law.
That's correct. May I ask you a question, 3072?
Sure.
You are a health professional, right?
Yes.
So you deal with people all the time.
Yes.
Are there ever times where people misunderstand your motives or your intentions in your care for them?
The other day, I had a man threaten to kick the shit out of me.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
All right.
And guess
hold on.
What?
No,
I'm going somewhere. I'm going somewhere here.
Well, let me. Because
I know
let
where you're going.
My...
Go ahead.
No, well,
go
let me,
ahead.
Well, let
go
me
ahead.
Finish, and then you come back.
Okay.
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 So people,
yes.
People misunderstand your motives and intention as a healthcare provider dealing with people, John Q. Public.
Yeah.
That doesn't make the assumptions about you right, though, because they miss. Read your intention. Would you agree with that, yes or no?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay, go ahead. You wanted to reply. Pastor, I haven't forgot you, man.
Now, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to be taking over the thing. But I'll just say this and I'll stop. To make my point about knowing my job, and I know what my job entails, and especially at the hospital that I'm at now, is in a lower-class black community where poor people are, and like we're talking about, that haven't been taught or just don't know no better. This man was crazy. He was crazy. So what if I'd have took all of that stuff personal? And we did wind up having to call security and have him put at the hospital because he was becoming more and more physically violent. But that didn't bother me, the fact that he was yelling bees and calling me niggers and threatening to put his hands on me. I wouldn't say, no, don't treat him. I just, maybe somebody else can come in here and help him because he need help.
But he
so
was wrong
about you. So if the police
you,
can't be, he, huh?
He was wrong about you. The assumptions he made about you was wrong.
I wasn't a bitch. I'm not a nigger. And I was not going to stand by and let him kick the shit out of me. No.
Right.
Yeah, all of that was wrong, incorrect.
But what made
incorrect.
Him? What made him? I'm just speaking to whatever precipitated that, this vitriol toward you. There was something about you as a healthcare provider that put him in a position, right or wrong.
The fact was, what was about me was a.
Hey, you're breaking up on us there.
He didn't like Nick. Can you hear me?
Okay,
yeah,
hear
I heard
you.
Yeah,
this man, first of all, he didn't like the fact that I was black. He didn't like niggers is what he expressed.
Yeah, thank you.
That's what he expressed.
All right.
And when I moved
all
in
right.
to do my job, that's when he started threatening physical violence. Like I was telling them, I don't care about what he nigger and all that other stuff. Now, when you talk about putting your hands on me, that's something totally different. I'm going to respect you and your wants. And I excuse myself. They decided to put him out. I mean, y'all, he need treatment, treat him. I don't care what this man's saying and thinking about me. My point is the police need to be on that same level of mind frame. It's not just about you. And you're going to run into people that is out there committing crimes, seriously. But you need to weigh up, again, is it just about you, or are you out here trying to, for one, follow the rules of your job, and two, follow the law that you're trying to make hold other people accountable for doing?
Okay, I got you. Your point is stated. Pastor Waller, what were we going to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's well said that she said that the way she did. I mean, and to put emphasis on it, I mean, it's hard stuff, you know what I mean? And so go back to the dog. The canine is very smart, and
mm-hmm.
he will follow the dog, and the dog follow my order. Whatever I tell that dog to do, he's going to do it.
Yeah.
You see, and what they did was, you know, they didn't, again, after they decided that if they call the dogs and the dog get him a sentence, to make them, because I wasn't going to allow them to search my car, so the dog had to let it be known that I sensed something. Now they can search the car, and they want me to flinch now because you got 10 police officers down there. First, it started off with one. Now there's 10 of them, and if I flinch or do anything, they were going to beat me down. But I still wouldn't tell the minister. I still wouldn't say anything. So what I did was, so now I said, officer, just don't scratch up my car. So whatever you do, don't scratch up my car. They went on around. And started up there at the front of the car and went around on the driver's side, went all the way around. And then by the time he got on around to the passenger side, they knew they had to tell the dog something. Told that dog to scratch, and he did. Told that dog to scratch, and that's what that dog did. The dog was scratched, and then that caused him to be able to search the car is what I'm saying. That's the only reason why they was able to search the car. The dog had to give them a sense of they – smell something, but the dog was scratching the car like, why do you have me scratching this car? Because I sure don't smell nothing.
Mm.
That's the way the dog was. The dog wasn't scratching like it's something there. That dog was scratching
okay.
something. He's following order. So that means that you
right.
isolated the dog.
Right.
That's wicked, man.
I guess,
I'm not saying they all were like that, but that was wicked, and the police officer that knew that it was wicked.
Okay.
And they did too. But they found out I was a minister later on, Pastor. Let me say this. They found out I was a minister later on after the search and after done all this because I asked them a question. I said, man, people going riding through here and they're going to see you all here stopping me like this. They're going to think I'm doing something that I'm not really doing. And then you know what they asked me, what they said to me? They said, you're going to tell them that we just doing our job, aren't you? That's what they said to me.
Okay.
I'm
going
to tell the people who are trying to say something to me that y'all were just doing your job. So that means that they really just. Marking you now, just whatever we do is all right. Just tell them we're just doing our job.
Yeah, it's funny.
It's not fair to the people. That's all I'm saying.
You know what I cannot do is I cannot speak to the intentions and the motives of the officer that stopped you. Did you happen to get the officer's name?
I wasn't even trying to do nothing to him, man. I could have done all that. I wasn't thinking about none of that. I just wanted to make sure.
No, I didn't.
Okay. I really didn't. I didn't even want to.
Because who has time? Who got time for that?
I didn't want to go through none of that. I just wanted to realize who you were stopping. You stopping the person that is the spokesperson for this whole community. Once they found out that, they all set back. And the other 10 police that was there, they felt so bad for the police who stopped me that I bet they wanted to beat him up. when they realized where I was they went at, they probably wanted to beat him up. Said, man, look what you've done. You done made us stop the person who's the spokesperson for this whole community. I made him pull out the plaque. I was there. I made him read the book. And I'm saying all that to say this, Pastor. This is a humble thing. I wasn't thinking about telling him, reporting him. I wasn't going through all that stuff. Y'all know you was wrong. And telling them about that ain't going to do no good. I ain't going to go through it. And then they scratched my car up. You know?
Okay.
So, you know,
Let me see what Outkast think about this conversation we've just had. I'm just curious to know where you sit with that, Outkast.
Well, you know, people have different experiences. I've never spent no more time in a police car than in a cruise or whatever you want to call it. I spent no more time than it normally would take them to run me to the Justice Center, and that's that. I don't interact with police like that. Me coming up, you know, we learned to stay away from the police, you know. I don't interact with them like that. I ran into it, you know, a few traps, you know, since I've been here in Nashville, being in the wrong neighborhood, riding down Lafayette, mm-hmm. you know, and stuff like that. I know that this is a hot area. I know, and I knew to stay away around there, but I was, you know, taking a detour a couple of times and got pulled over. But, you know, I knew what they wanted. You know, like I said, one officer told me I ran a stop sign, which I know I didn't. Well, guess what? I didn't argue with him because I knew what he wanted. I gave him my driving license, and I gave him my insurance. He just went on back in the little car and hit a little data bank and see that I have any warrants or whatever, and let me go. I never questioned why you stopped me. I'm not going to ask you why you stopped me. You tell me why you stopped me.
I was
on 54. I think there's 54th over there one night.
Okay.
And I was driving. And police got behind me, you know. I turned my motor off, put my dome light on, put my hands on the steering wheel. Officer walked up to me. He said, you know why I stopped you? I said, no. He said, you got a headlight out. I said, what? A headlight out? And surely my headlight was out. He said, I'll tell you what. He said, if another officer pulled you over, you tell him, officer so-and-so, just stop you. As soon as I came off 54 and got on Charlotte, going up Charlotte, you know, toward the interstate, officer stopped me. Officer stopped me. I swear, officer so-and-so told me to tell you that he stopped. Just stop me. You know what the officer told me? Go ahead on. Now, different people have different things happen to different people, but I never.
Sure.
You really don't have to do anything for them to pull you over anyway, as I just stated. But now they can play that game with me until the day I die pulling me over. I don't care. You know, as long as I have what you want and as long as I'm aware of what you're looking for that I don't have, I'm okay. One officer told me one time, he said, no, he just start sprinkling. And I didn't have my windshield wipers on. He had me pull my driver's license. And I gave it to him. And, like, you know what, when he came back, I didn't ran a little check. He said, we run a survey around here. Still right around that area around there on the fed. Stay out of those hot areas. When you're in hot areas, this is going to happen. See, because for number one, in those neighborhoods, the black folks done already called their presence down there. Now, they can holler racism all they want, but now you got these people that are tired of their crap, and they want it out of there. And I'm a hole right there, but I don't deal with police like that. I welcome them to pull me over anytime they want.
I was just gonna say it. I mean, I wanted to make sure everybody know that I'm not telling anybody to fight the police. But to me, the few times that I was pulled over, another time I had my three children in the car. And, yeah, like Pastor Waller was saying, why does it take two other police cars? I'm in there with my kids and groceries. What can I do? However, it's degrading. It's degrading. I don't have a record. I never had a record. I didn't commit a law. He said I was going to over 30. Okay, so maybe that was true. But even with that, why does it take three police cars? Why? You run my
life.
You want
to answer you to that?
You find nothing. Huh? Yeah.
Are
yeah.
You,
since you want to.
Is that a rhetorical
yeah, sure.
question?
Yeah.
Is that a rhetorical
yeah.
question?
Yeah. And,
you
and
really want to know?
I am. Yeah, you can answer that. But when I'm done talking. So Outkast is saying he don't mind. I mind being pulled over because you're wasting my time. I have other things to do. And why are you pulling me over? The real criminals are getting away. They getting away. I haven't done anything.
Amazing.
But go ahead.
Hey, Pastor, let me say something before you do, man. Listen, when he stopped me, he asked me, do you know why I'm stopping you? And I let him tell me why he stopped me. I didn't ask him why he stopped me. He told me why he stopped me. Okay, so now go on and do what you're going to do. But I knew it. Whatever he wanted to do to me was all right. But I had somebody else in the car with me, and guess what he came back and said? Who was that over there? I thought you stopped me for this. What has he got to do with it now? You said,
right,
what has he got
right.
to do with it? You say you stopped me for this last game, give me a ticket, beat me up, whatever you want to do. But why are you saying something about this man over here on the passenger side? He's not driving, I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying this is what I'm talking about. So you got to remember that when you're doing stuff intentionally from the start, if you're jabbing from the start, you're going to jab all the way to the end.
Yeah.
And that's what he needed to do. And it wasn't done with my permission. He done it on his own. I didn't tell him to stop me. I didn't tell him not to stop me. But when he stopped me, I gave him my license. And he said, you know why I stopped? I stopped because you ran this white line right here. I said, okay, we're going to do your thing, is what I said to myself.
Right.
By the time he came back, he said, who was that over there? I knew then. I said, there you go. There you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, again, I want to emphasize police procedure. A number of cases where police got out of the car and they routinely went to ask questions and they were shot and killed. So now it's a standard procedure based on the discretion of the officer that's on the scene first and or the circumstances, that being like a certain area where there are certain incidents that are known to happen. It doesn't matter who you are, they will bring in extra backup as a precautionary measure for safety of the officers. That doesn't mean that you were guilty of anything. It doesn't mean that their suspicion really was true about you. However, the truth is there are some ruthless people out there in our society, in our community, and the police have to go out there and put their life on the line and run into harm's way for everybody, the right and the unright. That's their job. So they have these procedures oftentimes to as a precautionary or protective measure. A lot of times...
And can I...
No, hold on. Let me finish now. I let you talk. Let me finish what I'm trying to tell you. Okay. And oftentimes the average citizen is unaware of police procedure, and it seems in their mind it's unnecessary. They didn't have to do that. They could have just did so-and-so, so-and-so. Well, because you don't understand the nature of policing and police procedures, I can understand why it doesn't seem that way. They have a thing called Citizen Academy where they allow at certain times of the year average citizens to go into the police training academy and learn about these processes. The idea is that you share them at your churches, you share them at the community centers, on your block, in your neighborhood watch areas, and they even have people come into your meeting explaining and answer those type of questions. You know, I'm not sure what else can be done, but that's, again, and I can't speak to any particular scenario because I don't know all the facts there. But go ahead, 3072.
Well, again, and it's clear now that we're in going like back and forth in the debate. Again, I have family members that are police officers. I have a brother who's chief of police. And no way am I trying to say that all police are bad. But what I am trying to say that a lot of them, a large number, need to be let go or retrained. Now, in my situation... In my situation with my three kids that they frightened the death out of, with them flashing lights and all that, in my situation, I'm a block from my house coming from Walmart. You said I was going over 30. I darn sure wasn't going 60 miles per hour. Hey, I would have flicked my lights even. Hey, slow it down, something like that. No, you just going to waste all this time calling all these people over there and all of this. Got to get my license. No, we running this, we running that. And then you look stupid when you try to continue to follow me and I pull into my house. Right, man, a block away. What was all that necessary? You could have been catching somebody else really doing something.
Yeah, well, you know,
we're talking about judgment. Judgment, though,
right.
I would have judged differently.
Right, but
hey,
but would you agree? So 30-72, you were not the officer,
mm-hmm.
and it was not your judgment that mattered at that point.
That's my point, and that's the whole point I'm talking about. We need more officers out there that's going
to
use
think like you
typical
do,
judgment
right.
to think like me, and a lot of lives would be saved, and maybe possible communities can come together instead of feeling like they at war with the police. They should not feel like that.
Would you consider becoming
shouldn't
a police
like
officer?
Shouldn't
feel like that. Would
I,
you consider
darn sure wouldn't.
Officer?
No, I would
okay.
not. No.
I see. Okay. How can
so
what
that's
say?
Not in my scope.
She was saying that it was at night, right?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't even dark.
Oh,
and they got
okay.
lights
well, yeah.
and all this other stuff
and,
on.
And so you
like
didn't
I'm,
stop for him, you just went on home.
I did stop.
Because,
I had to stop.
No, but did you make it to your home?
No, I was stopped
oh, okay.
a block before I got okay. to my house.
Oh,
like
oh,
I was telling
oh.
him, I'm just going home. I have groceries back here. My kids, they crying, don't know what's going on. I'm just going right, you know. Yeah, and he gave me a ticket. Yes. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I would have done something
Did
different,
you?
But exactly. So.
Well, now, I've been pulled over plenty of times myself. In fact, it seemed
yeah.
like every time I got in my car in Chicago, I was pulled over. And they snatched me out the car, and they put billy clubs, and one of them put a pistol in my face. That was a long time
See?
Ago. But since I've been here
yeah.
in Nashville, I've been pulled over, and I've been asked questions. I've been asked for my driver's license and so forth. And, I've been – so I was at my church at 11 o'clock at night, leaving my church, and got pulled over.
Mm-hmm.
Over on Buchanan Street. But you know,
mm-hmm.
Buchanan is hot and popping, right? In
yep.
Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
That's one of those
yeah.
high crime areas, right?
Right.
And so the police officer asked me some questions, and I answered them accordingly. I waited until he gave me directives. And when he got through doing what he had to do, he gave me my license, and I kept on going my merry way. I didn't
yeah.
get it personal, though.
Yeah.
I was glad that he was out there patrolling because there have been numerous homicides over there.
Right.
But I was glad to see he was on the job. That's what
right.
my tax dollars are going for. But,
and for,
but
for officers for officers like that, I'm glad that they're on the job too. For the ones that's out there doing dirt and in the job for the wrong reasons, I'm sorry that they're there.
It's clear. It's
well,
clear.
We all are. We don't have no disagreement concerning that. We all agree with that.
Yeah.
I think I said that if there is an officer that is violating the 1965 Civil Rights Clause, color of law, and they're abusing the authority, they need to be held to account. I believe I said that.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah.
my opinion and my feeling or my notions about that is not enough to charge such an officer with it, though.
Yeah.
You can have a
okay.
lot more than that to do that. And
I agree.
Having said
and
that,
they should have a lot more
that,
than that, too. Uh-huh.
Having said that, it's a very tenuous situation. And what I would encourage people to do is to understand what the expectations of every citizen are and follow those things first. And then once you
mm-hmm.
do that and you find yourself in a situation where you believe that they're unreasonably search and seizing, then you take that to court. I've had situations.
And
knock
on wood, my car has never been searched. Thank God.
Oh,
I mean, I've never had that happen. Yeah.
Mine have.
Yeah.
Mine have. I mean, but that's the nature of the business. They maybe got some cookie crumbs off the floor, but I mean, you know what I mean. My wife is the only one that's gonna get me. I'm gonna get in trouble with her for that. But hey, it'll be all right. That'll be okay. I told you, make sure you don't tell her I got these cookies in this car. But I'm just saying, at the end of the day, when you're in order, you're in a much better position to properly have remedies for wrong that's being done. And when we talk about restorative justice, the fact that you have to restore it means it left. And the question is, how did it leave? Who ran it off? Unfortunately, in urban American neighborhoods and communities, there's too much rampant crime and disregard for law and order, and that makes the police have to come in there. And you have to restore justice and peace for everybody, because there are other law-abiding citizens that are hardworking, don't want to have to deal with the violations that are too often prevalent, particularly in urban centers and neighborhoods where people feel as though they can choose which laws to follow, which ones they don't have to. Now, that's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. We've got to first teach that when you're in the right, that's why the text said, I read the text at the beginning of the show, where it talks about how he reigns on the just as well as the unjust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Jesus is talking now. And he's saying that, look, the sun rises on the evil and the good and reigns on the just as well as unjust. So righteousness doesn't just apply to one people. It applies to everybody, regardless of what your ethnicity is. Go ahead.
That's right. I don't know. It just breaks my heart to see innocent people that is the just suffering at the hands of unjust. And that goes across all racial lines and all job professions and everything.
Sure.
That really, it
sure.
just bothers me. It makes me sick is what it does.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure it does.
Yeah.
Sure it does. You know, I was a supervisor in a juvenile detention facility, and there were times where I would tell those that were my coworkers and my equals, then listen, you out of order, man, and if you don't get it straight, I'm not going to sit here and watch you doing wrong by these young folks in this place and not hold you to account. Because my job is to look out for their interests while they're here. Now,
and that's what I'm talking about, yes.
The fact that you are a staff and are a ranking staff or higher, that don't make it right. That don't make it right. So, but
and some of them probably feel like, well, it's a juvenile detention center, so we know that doesn't mean that I treat you like you are nothing. That means we're gonna follow the rules here, and you gonna follow the rules here, and that's what we're gonna do. And the law is gonna prevail, however it's supposed to. That's
right.
It.
They're well established procedures for everybody.
Yes.
To follow.
Yes.
When I was a correction officer, I used to tell the guys all the time, my job is to make sure you carry out the sentence that you were given by the judge.
That's
Your
it.
Job
That's
is to
it.
Do what you're supposed to while you're here. And we do that,
That's
we ain't got
it.
No problem. We don't have to have no problem with each other. So, man, look at the time. Pastor Waller?
Hey, Pastor, it sounds like you wouldn't. Not like you wasn't misusing your authority, though, Pastor. You know what I mean? That's
I'm going to tell you what, Pastor. I'm going to tell you what, Pastor. Every day I came in there, it was depressing because the average age of the cats that were in there were my age at that time.
Yeah.
As a young man, I was 20-something years old, and there was a lot too many brothers in there, man. I'm like, God, no, I got to get out of here. that was depressing, man.
Yeah,
but
when I worked the prison sentence, any time where you start to feel that frustrated, like you were saying, Reverend Dockery, about seeing people your age, when you start to take it personal and it starts to get to you personally, then you should consider a new line of work.
Well,
because that's how
you're
gonna act out when you come to work.
Well, I mean, that's one of the jobs, the occupational habits, what they call them.
Yeah.
Occupational
habits. You should consider a new line of work so you don't start abusing people and breaking the law.
But okay, we cut off Pastor Waller. What were you saying, Pastor?
Yeah, it would be a joy to see both sides be able to respect one another, as we've been talking about. 3072 made mention of it. It would be a great thing because we need them when we need them, when they to be called on. But making a decision, you know, at that moment is valuable because, you know, you can get some person and have them to be, you know, against you because, you know, the innocence won't allow them to say, oh, he's doing your job. You know, and that to be people doing things, breaking the law in a way where you know, they need to be attended to them over there, but you over here doing something that you already know is not right. It's not that you don't know. There's a difference between knowing that you're doing wrong toward a person versus, you know, you just checking. There's a major difference. So we have to make sure that we make that known. You know, it's not a bad thing to bring it to the table, talk about it. I wasn't trying to get them charged or nothing like that, even though I know I could have. They scratched my car off. I could have got something done about that. I wasn't thinking about that stuff, man. I was thinking about the people that I'm out there trying to minister to now. And my thoughts are, man, if they do me like this, man, they don't have a chance is what I was saying, you know. And and I don't stereotype who's doing what, who's not doing what. I don't go around saying, you on drugs? Are you not on drugs? I don't do no stuff like that. I'm just there for the people. And if you call up on me, I like to be there to intercede for them because as a watchman on the wall, man, it's not easy. So I can understand the police have a job that they have to do. And I'm sure they want to go home. You know, but when you're out there starting stuff with the intent to do wrong, man, that's what brings a lot of man, you know, in the community. Especially in a, you know, when you're dealing with people of poverty, man, I mean, it's already tough.
Yep.
You know, it's like a crime against you already. And then you're going to come down and mash on me. Wow.
Well, that's interesting, Pastor. That, I was going to tell 3072, I've been invited as a guest lecturer at Tennessee State University, and it's for an African-American male class, sociology class. And I've been trying to figure out exactly how we're going to approach it because I don't want the young men or the young women in the class to think that I'm hard outcast on black males.
Yeah.
I'm not. Mm-mm. I just know that there are some things we have to correct about ourselves in order for us to process and do better in America.
So are you going to have a topic, a theme topic?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, much of what we've been talking about here is what I'm, you know, Outcast has helped me put together the lecture. I mean,
that's nice.
He done already wrote the lecture for me, but I'm just saying, you know. But it's interesting you say that because you're right. People are often, we got 2 minutes here, we got to hurry up. People are often on the defensive. So but it's going to be all right. We're going to make it. Give me 10 seconds, Outcast, then we'll go to 3072 and Pastor Waller round us up here.
Always stay calm. Keep your head.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Okay. 3072, right quick. Give me 10 seconds.
I echo Outcast.
Don't be trying to steal his, man. Don't be trying to steal his.
He's right.
Okay. The time is unwrapped. Now, go ahead, Pastor, wrap us up, man. Get us out of here. We'll be back next Tuesday at 7 o'clock for another episode of Talk Faith. Pastor, give us a final thought here and get us out of here, man.
Yeah, I would say comply or else you bring forth more trouble. And that's the thing that I would say. But the Word of God said, according to Psalm 46:1, it said, God is our refuge and strength, a very present in trouble. Well, he knew I was in trouble. He made sure I was able to get out so they wouldn't be able to beat me down like they was getting ready to do. So I thank God for stepping in, helping me while I was in the face of victory. You know how they say trouble don't last always? Well, I got out.
Right.
Praise God.
Okay.
Yeah, man.
All right. Listen, thank you all very much. Powerful show. Good conversation. I'm going to listen to that again because I heard some things, man. I heard some things. But we appreciate you. Pastor, as always, thank you, Outcast and 3072. I hope you all have a good rest of the evening. And we'll see you guys next Tuesday, 7 o'clock p.m.
for another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Ruben Dockery, signing off.